Hey, it's Finn, and if you've been listening to 680 for long, you know that I'm a big fan of Audi Atlanta. That's where I got my Audi Q8 e-tron, which I absolutely love. And it's the only dealership I would recommend to my friends and my family. And here's why. For one, Audi Atlanta has a great selection of luxury vehicles. They helped me find the exact SUV I was looking for, and the purchase was super easy. A fully transparent experience catered to me. The same experience they provide all their customers. And here's one more reason that makes Audi Atlanta so special. During the month of April, Audi Atlanta will make a donation to Enduring Hearts for every vehicle sold. Thanks to the efforts of Enduring Hearts, children with heart transplants are living longer and healthier lives. Get the Audi you've always wanted while supporting a great cause. To learn more about Enduring Hearts and to view our current specials, visit AudiAtlanta.com to start or complete your entire purchase online. Or shop Audi Atlanta in person, like I did, on Peachtree Boulevard just inside the perimeter. Together, we have the power to make positive changes that could last a lifetime.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
The main takeaway from spring practice has changed in literally the most drastic way possible. It is Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. How are we today? Honk your horn if you hear me. I don't think we do that on the show. But you can honk your horn if you want to. It is a Monday, and I appreciate everybody coming here for college football conversation. We have sprinkled in some college hoops conversation over the past couple of weeks, and I mean, there will be a comment or two, I'm sure, at some point today. Bama took the pipe the other night. They got beat by a really good team that plays a lot of defense and can block a lot of shots. They still weren't supposed to lose that game. But they got beat by a really quality squad, and so Tennessee had gotten thumped, and so you got a Final Four of San Diego State, FAU, Miami, and UConn. I didn't think that, like, the final, I don't know, 30 miles of the United States in South Florida would get half the Final Four. But it happened. So that's what that is. But we got spring practice going on. And items that have caught my eye over the last, I'll say, what is today, the 27th? I'm going to say over the past week. I keep going back somewhere that I really wasn't planning to go to yet. I thought we were going to reach spring games before I started going back. Can I give a credit to Dan? We know a bunch of people work for 247, right?
So I'm just a whole roster, yeah.
Throw a bone here because this thing is mostly free. If you go to 247sports.com, I don't know, Dan, do you have a better transfer portal than 247, man? They keep it running. The NCAA transfer portal Twitter account does a great job too, but I think it's an offshoot of 247. 247 does a great job. So you can go find anything you want about recruiting, transfers, whatever. And so on my Twitter account, over about the past week, I started seeing like an uptick in announcements that I thought would be coming once we got past spring games, because the transfer portal window opens May 1st and it'll stay up May 1st through 15th. I thought after the spring game and all was said and done, at least as much as can be done after 14 practices in a pretend game, if you even have one, I thought then, okay, I'm going to transfer. Mm-mm. It's already started happening. And when I say that the main takeaway from spring practice has changed in such a drastic, it literally is the exact opposite. Folks, spring practice in college football is no longer about deciding what your two deep might look like. It's about deciding which players won't be on the team at all come the season. In fact, I would say in most cases, coaches, if they have a preference, that they're able to kind of pull this off with a straight face. It used to be about really working hard and deciding and getting your leaders, and then this guy wins. And of course, you can, I mean, every practice, Tuesday in October, every job's open. So you can declare a starter. Yeah, he's a starter till he's not. Go out and defend your job now. Spring practice at one point, It was possible to win a job. I'm not kidding. It was possible to win a job. That's not what spring practice is. In fact, I declare most coaches, they want to go the other way. The last thing most coaches want to do is declare a winner of a job. Coaches want as much wide open Atlantic Ocean ambiguity as possible for the depth chart. Why is that? So that nobody will transfer, except for the players they want to transfer. And this is a giant two-way street. When I say it's no longer, it used to be if we DeLorean back to 1978 or 1988 or 1998. Like, you don't have to go back to, you know, times before the moon landing. But you can. Or you can go back 20 years. Doesn't matter. Spring practice, it used to be, well, we lost our starting left tackle. We have the guy who's backed him up for 2 years. We have a guard who we think may have outgrown. He's gotten a little tall. Maybe he's got better feet. So we're going to try him. Because it's spring, we're going to try him. But then we did sign this really highly rated recruit. So we've got a little mixed bag. We got three guys. They're going to fight it out. And then after 14 practices and a pretend game, do you know what the coach would do almost always? We've really developed some depth. It was a big deal. And then what he doesn't say is, but the dude's 18. It ain't easy to play in the ACC or SEC or Pac-10 or at 18. It's not on the line. So he's not going to play, but good for him being here and good for us. The other guy, boy, he tries hard. And he'll contribute and he'll probably fill in at three different spots and he'll get five starts this year. And then at the banquet, he gets whatever, like who's our distinguished alumni who died in the war? He gets that award at the year-end banquet. But our starter at left tackle is going to be the guy who redshirted and then backed up the last two seasons and now has a full beard, a wife, and a family. That's the guy who's going to protect our quarterback. And he would announce it, and everybody know. Now? Oh, my Lord. We don't carve it in stone. I've never heard of stone. What stone? People carve things? That's way too permanent. Spring practice. We don't decide anything. Except we decide, yeah, we don't need those guys. From the coach's standpoint, we don't want that guy around. And so, you know what you can do now with the transfer portal? I mentioned this with Deion last week. You can... Deion has caused me to change my language a little bit, my verbiage, actually. I was about to say, you can go to the player now and tell him flat out, you're not going to play. You should jump in the portal if you want playing time. I'm not going to kick you off the team, but you're going to have to do all this. And, you listen to the Chuck Oliver show. Yes, sir. Well, we all do. And on the Chuck Oliver show, he's talked about the concept how literally the only, like John Emery at LSU, the only fun part about football is playing the games. John Emery keeps doing all of the hard stuff, like literally everything except, okay, now it's Saturday and I'm out there. So you can do all the hard stuff if you want to, but come Saturday, you really are not. We have no plans for you, even if we're up seven touchdowns or down by seven. We have no plans. So you can transfer. You don't have to do that anymore. What I just said there, I think, was pretty direct. Most coaches would hem and haw, I believe, a little bit. I got kind of to the point. So even if you were like, I mean, a verbal nosedive, here we go. You want to transfer because you're never going to get on the field. If it takes 60 seconds and you need to have 30 of those conversations, you got to schedule them. And then you got to actually have the kids show up, and then five won't. You got to reschedule, and that's part of why you're not here. And then, so it takes the coach's time. Even if you drill down and get as efficient as possible, that's an hour and a half of the coach's time, minimum. This way? Deion's way? Do you remember Deion's way? Hi, I'm Deion Sanders. It's good to be here in Boulder. Anybody currently on scholarship should transfer. All right. So that's what it is from the coach. It can be that way from the coaches. It can be that way from the players as well, but there's two fronts. One is when they're on the business end of that conversation. They're on the receiving end of the, hey, you should transfer conversation. The other is when the player decides this is not good enough for me. When the program does have plans. But you know what? I'm not hanging around to provide you upperclassmen quarterback depth. I've got one more season to do anything, so I don't care if I transfer to Penn State or Alcorn State. I want to sling the rock, dude. I got literally 4 more months of eligibility ever, including COVID, and I played 4 games, and I got hurt and got a medical. I can't do anything else. This is my 7th year. I'm out. Like Stetson Bennett. Like, do you remember Kirby Smart after the game? He was talking to his son. He said he was crying. He was like, Stetson's leaving. He's like, he's 25. He has to leave. Like, he has to leave. I got 1 season left. I want to play. Yeah, but it'll have to be at Sam Houston State. I tell you what, Sam Houston State, they appreciate football there. I'll give you credit. You go win for the Bearcats. Or is that Stephen F. Austin?
No, that's Sam.
Okay. What is Stephen F. Austin?
Lumberjacks.
Oh. Yeah, Sam Houston State, Bearcats. So you go sling it for the Bearcats. Or go down the street to Houston Baptist. Like, literally, go to Rice. I don't care. You got 1 season left. I get you. I absolutely get you. And the head coach doesn't. Because it's the new day. And even though he wasn't trying to run you off, he wanted you to stay. You're like, no, I got one more chance. So that's what the transfer portal is about. The spring practice is about now from both ends. It used to be about deciding what your 2-deep might look like come August, then September. Some of the headlines that got me, like Cameron Brown. Do you know Cameron Brown? Remember him? Linebacker? He was Derek Brown's kid, right? Little brother. And so Cameron Brown had gone to Auburn and got on the field some. And he's like, I'm going to graduate. Or maybe he did. Or maybe graduate. He's like, I'm going in the transfer portal because I want to play somewhere. And it's a really competitive room all of a sudden. I was like Minnesota. I was expecting this to happen like after spring games. Auburn has not had a spring game. They just started practicing again after spring break. After a spring game, okay. It's happening now. Like I practiced 4 times and it's the middle of spring and I'm in the portal. I noticed this with Minnesota. I think they've had 4 kids jump in the portal since practice started. Not since practice ended. Since practice started. You're getting through like a week of practice looking around going, yeah, this ain't working for me. There was somebody last year, I'm trying to remember, I think he literally went through one practice. Dan, who was the quarterback that the coach at Louisville called out and he said, well, he transferred here for 1 practice. I guess he didn't like it at Louisville. And then was it McCaffrey? Was it the youngest McCaffrey?
I think it was, yeah.
He transferred to Louisville for a day. And I think Satterfield, didn't he, what did the kids say, put him on blast? He went on Twitter. He said, well, we had one guy transferred here. He got through a practice. Guess he didn't like it. They ain't waiting, man. All right, we're going to take a break. Jump into it next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football and Chuck Oliver Show. And I am about outcomes, and I think that that has gotten lost. And it's a credit to agents and coaches, but they have gotten us fixed on so many things that are not outcomes, like a recruiting class ranking. That's not an outcome. Hashtag Jimbo. It is a giant facet of how you get to the outcome, which is winning a ball game on a Saturday. But a number one ranked recruiting class, hashtag Ronald Powell, hashtag, was that 2010? Yeah, I should have had that worked out because the hashtag thing was going. But I think it was the 2010 class, the number one class like ever. It wasn't an outcome. It's an indicator. So recruiting is just an indicator, but Billy Napier, he had, my gosh, I don't know, 150 coaches, head coaches from Florida and Georgia, from all over on campus this past weekend. They're about halfway through spring practice, but getting that many head coaches to come around, that's not nothing. I want to welcome on right now. We'll talk all kinds of stuff. GatorCountry.com, that's a site. It is Andrew Spivey. Brother, how are you on this Monday?
I'm doing good, and hashtag Jaden Rashada bumped that class up in December for the Gators.
Yes, he did, as a matter of fact. And it's one of those things that you look at sometimes and go, oh, yeah, we need to revise this immediately. It used to be, remember, we would revise like 3 years later, let's re-rank the recruiting classes. Now you can do it like within 24 hours because it can move around so much. Talk a little bit about the head coaches and such on campus, because that's not nothing. You're getting a lot of folks that you got to have relationships with still, even including the portal. You can't ignore your high school relationships.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a who's who. I mean, a lot of NFL guys as well on campus. They call it the chalk talk, where they bring in high school coaches from around the Southeast and really the country if they want to, but mainly the Southeast. You kind of want to get those guys on campus that are you're recruiting their guys for. So they come on campus and listen to the likes of several NFL coaches. Chris Runt was a big hit, the former Gator coach who's now with the Minnesota Vikings. And it's this big deal for Billy Napier, and it really kind of translated too, because several of those high school guys brought some of their top recruits with them to watch practice while they were doing the coaches clinic. So all in all, I think it's a major success for Billy Napier, and I think it's a way to kind of speed up those relationships he's trying to build with some of these high school coaches, not only in the state of Florida, but Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee.
How's the new wide receiver coach?
Billy Gonzalez, he's back again. It wasn't the splash hire that many people wanted.
I think he's a good coach. Go ahead.
I think so too. It wasn't the splash hire many people wanted when they lose Kerry Colbert. And you know, my whole rebuttal to that is Kerry Colbert really didn't do much. Billy Napier has a past, has a resume of being a pretty good coach. Is he a great recruiter? Probably not, but he's a really good coach. And now with the NIL, does recruiting being a really good recruiter really matter? Not really. Who's got the best NIL package for everybody? So I like it. I think Billy Gonzalez brings something that Billy Napier really likes, and that's an aggression on that outside, a coach who really preaches blocking and getting after it on the outside. And really this is a team that needs a technique style of coach, and that's what Billy Gonzalez is going to do, really get these guys to fine-tune their route running. That was something they were terrible at last year, and that's something I think they'll be a lot better at. So for me, it's a good hire. Was it the splashy hire you wanted? No, but it wasn't the splashy time of the year to go get a splashy hire.
Y'all been watching like 15, 20 minutes a day. Which 15 minutes? Not like specialty period or, you know, stretching, is it? Is it a decent 15 minutes?
15 minutes might be stretching it a little bit, but yeah, we get stretching, you know, little warm-ups. And then when the one-on-ones start happening, they show us the exit door. So not much. Been able to see a little bit of the quarterbacks throw a little bit, and obviously been able to talk to people who've been able to see it. And I get it. They don't want us to see much. They let us see something, so I'm not complaining. But, you know, let me watch scrimmage tomorrow would be good, well, Billy Napier.
Well, could I ask you, just whoever you talk to, the whispers, the yells, the obvious, maybe this is 11th commandment sort of stuff, but if Jack Miller winds up starting week one, is there any scenario where that was a good thing? And I'm not trying to be a wiseacre. Like, can he raise his game enough that, like, wow, he wins this job? Or does this have to be like an injury, or we way overestimated Graham Mertz?
I think it has to be an injury. I mean, we all seen what Jack Miller was able to do in a bowl game. And granted, there was a lot of guys not playing. But we've been able to hear a lot of things about Jack Miller. He's just not ready to go. Now, does Graham Mertz bring serious concerns to the table? Absolutely. We've heard different reports that he still isn't exactly the most accurate guy, which we didn't think that was going to happen overnight from Wisconsin to Florida. But still, Graham Mertz has got to be your guy week one, or something has dramatically happened. Some injury has happened, and the sky is falling in Gainesville. Jack Miller's your starter next year. Everything we've been told is Graham Mertz is the guy. Obviously, Billy Napier is going to continue to say that it's a two-guy race out of respect for Miller being there. But it's a Graham Mertz deal, and we'll get to see it on display here in a week from Thursday at the spring game.
I think I saw photos of, no video, but I saw photos from Ricky Pearsall, I believe. What's the blue sky, man? It can be a lot more. People think that, like, if you're short and if you're short and white, it's a bunch of 8-yard slants. He averaged damn near 20 yards a catch last year.
Yeah, I mean, for 40 to be what they want to be this year, and that to be successful, like the expectations are at Florida, Ricky's got to be that guy that can stretch this field. He's got to be the guy that can really take that slant and go with it. He's got to be able to run that 9 route and take the top off and be able to hit that post route. That was something they, you know, tried a lot last year. Anthony Richardson didn't get him the ball very often.
No.
But Ricky Pearsall has got to be the guy who is the difference maker, that when you turn on the tape every week to watch Florida, you say, we better take away number one. They really need that to happen. And so far, it does look like Ricky has kind of taken that step forward. Jacavion Frazier is another guy that's helped him. And Xavier Henderson is still there. He needs help there, or he's going to be double-teamed all day. But so far, the early impressions we've gotten is Ricky has done well. Him and Graham have been working a lot off the field as well to kind of build that connection, and they seem to have already built a little bit of a connection between the two of them.
I think he's a really fantastic receiver. And I said short. Is he 6 feet? Like, he's a legit 6 foot?
I would say he's a legit 6 foot. You know, I don't know that he's one of those guys that's on the roster and you say, yeah, he's way shorter. He's one of those guys that you look at and you say, he can pass.
Man, you know what it is? Maybe it was just standing next to Justin Shorter and, you know, Xavier Henderson and Reynolds and all those guys. Like, maybe he just looks, you know, shorter compared to some of those guys. Man, Andrew, always appreciate the input, man. Thank you as always.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chuck.
Andrew Spivey, Gator Country. Yep, that's just one of those things where your mind clicks to it and you go, white receiver, and he's quick. No, he's fast. Like Jordy Nelson, you know what Jordy Nelson was? Jordy Nelson was fast. And, but he's short. No, like Julian Edelman was short. I think. I think he was. Ricky Pearsall, to me, he's one of my favorite receivers in the SEC. And so much potential, and he had – it was just a really flawed execution on so many parts last year, but at the passing game of Florida. But part of it was, you know, Ricky, he had his drops just like everybody except Larry Fitzgerald. But it was a lot of I'm open, I'm here, there's a chance to make a play, and my quarterback didn't give me the ball. So I don't know how much better that gets with Graham Mertz.
Hey, it's Finn, and if you've been listening to 680 for long, you know that I'm a big fan of Audi Atlanta. That's where I got my Audi Q8 e-tron, which I absolutely love. And it's the only dealership I would recommend to my friends and my family. And here's why. For one, Audi Atlanta has a great selection of luxury vehicles. They helped me find the exact SUV I was looking for, and the purchase was super easy. A fully transparent experience catered to me. The same experience they provide all their customers. And here's one more reason that makes Audi Atlanta so special. During the month of April, Audi Atlanta will make a donation to Enduring Hearts for every vehicle sold. Thanks to the efforts of Enduring Hearts, children with heart transplants are living longer and healthier lives. Get the Audi you've always wanted while supporting a great cause. To learn more about Enduring Hearts and to view our current specials, visit AudiAtlanta.com to start or complete your entire purchase online. Or shop Audi Atlanta in person, like I did, on Peachtree Boulevard just inside the perimeter. Together, we have the power to make positive changes that could last a lifetime.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through hour one. Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. 9 states, 60 sticks. That'll come up in a minute. 9 states, 60 sticks. I appreciate the blessing. It's like you peeled the roof off my house and just kind of poured it in there. I flipped the switch. Light gets in the room because college football is just great. So back in the day, I was a writer full time, and I actually wrote and had published with real publishers 3 books. And when my third one was just getting signed to a contract, my first one was being released. And this is 22 or 3 or 4 years ago. And so here is me back in like 1999. I will quote myself, third book in a year and a half. I ain't got to do a damn thing the rest of my day except go to the mailbox. I thought I was going to be royalty central. That's not how writing a book goes. But it's fun, and it's one of those things that's just kind of cool to do. And our next guest, he got a book coming out. He knows how to string words together. I want to welcome on now. We're going to talk college football, but he's got a book coming out, and it looks fabulous. ESPN senior writer, and you see him on TV. It's Ryan McGee. Brother, how are you on this Monday?
I'm good, man. And listen, you know the deal. It's unless you are like Nicholas Sparks or the 50 Shades of Grey lady, no one makes money writing books. I just don't. But you do it. Hopefully you will, right? Hopefully somebody will mail you some checks. But the reality is you do it because you love it and you're passionate about it and you love to write, which I know you do and I do too. And, you know, you and I talked about the book I did a couple years ago with my dad about all his years officiating college football. And, you know, those were the stories that my dad had always told and I had always told, my brothers always told. We knew we weren't going rich writing that book, but it was one of the most rewarding experiences of my career. And, you know, now this new book, Welcome to the Circus of Baseball, about my one summer as a minor league $100 a week intern, you know, I didn't get rich that summer. I'm probably not going to get rich off of this, but, man, I sure have enjoyed doing it.
And you also, I bet every press box you've been in or wherever you clubhouse, anywhere, you understand the intern waiting for the last player to leave so they can get out that food table.
Dude, I try to be so nice to those men and women because I've been there. And, you know, like the NCAA basketball tournament, you go to all these different locations for all these different games or conference tournaments like we've all been to in the last month. And, you know, yeah, it might irritate you when the intern walks by and drops another press release on top of your laptop while you're trying to write. But I don't get mad because I've been there, man. Anybody that gets mad at those kids, they've never been there, and I've lived to tell the tale.
Oh yeah, 12-ounce Dr. Pepper and 2 Chick-fil-A sandwiches. It's like a boatload of spice back in colonial days. I mean, if you're an intern, yeah. that just makes the night. All right, so let's talk about college football a little bit. Are you proud of your alma mater again? Because we all get a turn, I said. And, you know, I'm an Auburn grad, and so I've had my turn. And there are times, like I said, we all get our turn. Are you proud of your alma mater again?
Yeah. I mean, it was in our, you know, the Tennessean and the Nashville News, they came out with a book a few weeks ago and asked me to write the foreword. And that's what I kind of wrote, which is, you know, we all had that moment. You know, you take your sports writer hat off, and you put your class ring on, and when I'm working the Alabama Tennessee game, I really honestly don't care who wins. I got to work the game. I want a great game. I want to have something to write about when it's over with. But as soon as that game ended in October, and this is what I wrote about in that forward, you know, I headed to the Strip and met up with my buddies from school, and yes, we were super excited, but you kind of exhale, right? Because you know this, because the worst part. And Alabama fans, people tend to forget this now. They were lost in the woods for a long time. And when you are not a part of the college football conversation for good reasons, and everyone else is off playing in big bowl games and winning games and going to conference championship games and all that stuff, and your proud program is still sitting at the house and going through, you know, yet another coach, you know, it just hurts your heart. And so just being, you know, again, my in-laws and roommates and everybody else, just being back in the conversation positively on a Saturday night is the goal. That is the goal. And Auburn and Tennessee are kind of blood brothers in that, where, you know, they major in drama in those two places.
Oh, and we also share the distinction of being the only two programs that get to play Alabama and Georgia every year.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, but
so,
you know,
yeah, that's fine.
It beats not, you know, nobody talking about football, I guess, yeah. Wherever you live.
And, you know, I've said that, you know, the most redneck thing in the world is arguing in the front yard. And I was like, every program, at some point, we start arguing in the front yard. Yeah. That's not exactly where it is in Gainesville right now. But I have stated that, you know, the goal isn't to win the East this year. It's to close, because that can't happen. Chaminade at sports, it can't happen. The goal is to close the gap. They're going to get further away this year. So if the result of 2023, I'll already state, is they're going to get further from Georgia, then where are we with Billy Napier entering year three? I mean, it is not difficult to fast forward this thing down the road. And I'm you tell me.
Well, first of all, I like Billy a lot.
I do too.
I've got ties to Furman. My father worked there for years, and you know, I wore a Furman hat on Marty McGee a couple weekends ago after they won their first round game in the NCAA tournament. And I remember when Billy was a great quarterback at Furman. And so I like him so much, and I'm hoping that it works out. The problem is, it kind of reminds me, honestly, of Tennessee's situation not that long ago, where, you know, you had a lot of years where Florida was scuffling, and when Georgia was scuffling, and when Kentucky still hadn't figured out how to play football, you know, the Missouri years of winning the SEC East, and you didn't capitalize. And that's kind of where Florida is. You know, now no one's going to catch Georgia for a long time. It's just how that is. And now Tennessee has woken up. Long-term, short-term, we'll see. And Kentucky, oh, by the way, all they do now is win 8-9 games a year. And so it's a much more difficult gap to close than it's ever been, particularly when it comes to the Georgia Bulldogs. So I'm hoping it's going to work. You know, here's the thing, and you knew this, you know, for all the talk about the Florida program was falling apart, all that stuff, he inherited a lot of talent in that building. He inherited a roster that should have beaten Alabama the year before, no matter how badly it fell apart when their coach lost interest in the second half that year. And so that's a really long way of saying, I don't know. But I'm hoping that it works, because I like Billy so much. I know he knows how to win. And now they have a coach who's actually he's trying to recruit, which was not the situation with his predecessor there at the end. So we'll see, man. But the problem is, you know, when Georgia's living up the road and you got to face them every Halloween weekend, that's a hard way to try to – that's a tough measuring stick.
All right. Last thing, Vanderbilt. You know, there's – trying to get ahead, there's trying to keep up. And those are usually the two categories. I'll look at spending and athletic department, leadership, and who do you hire and all that. And I'll say those are kind of the two categories. You know, I talked Georgia Tech. I was like, you're not trying to get ahead. You're making moves to keep up. That's all. Vanderbilt, yep. Dude, they're chasing the parade. Okay? Like, it's gone. What are they trying to do? They've actually started spending and earmarking money there, but what are they really trying to get done? Because it's as non-competitive a thing as it's been in a while.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is they got a guy in the building and a football coach that wants to be there. Like that's
true.
That's his dream job. That's the only job he wants and has ever has wanted, and was a great player there. And so when you sit down with him for 5 minutes, he'll make you believe. There's no question about that. And he understands what he can sell. Yeah, I would argue he's the first guy since James Franklin that knows what he can sell as far as where you're located, you know, and sell the fact that Nashville is cool and you're sitting right in the middle of it. But the reality is, until they get facilities, they're never going to even come close to catching up.
Yeah.
And they have to. And so now they're earmarking money to do that. But it's the only place in the conference. I mean, you give me all the programs that were once not great and are occasionally great. You know, give me Starkville, give me Missouri, give me whatever. It's Vanderbilt is so far behind everyone else when it comes to facilities. I mean, it's not even close. And so you can sell, you know, top 10 academic school, and you can sell top 10 coolest cities in the country, and you can sell all those things.
Yeah, but they got the mustard shag carpet in the – have you been – the coach's office got mustard shag carpet in it.
That's it. That's exactly where I was going. You can sell all that other stuff, but when you walk that kid into the building and you don't have facilities that are as good as anything that this kid has just seen on the West Coast or anything this kid has seen.
My Aunt Norma's house.
Exactly. That's it. And so you have to look like you care. And the reality is we know that those coaches care, but you have to. It has to look cool, and it just does not look cool.
Ryan McGee, get him on Twitter. I don't know if this was a focus group, but at ESPN McGee. It makes sense to me. Brother, I appreciate your time as always.
Hey, I appreciate it too, and we'll see you somewhere down the road.
All right, fist bump from distance. It's Ryan McGee from ESPN. Appreciate his time. So, yeah, it's not like, hey, let's treat Vanderbilt like a pinata day. I get nothing from that. I don't expect, like, candy to start flying out of Clark Lea. However, I've walked in there, and there was kind of this goldish, mustardish, like it wasn't even the right Vanderbilt color, yellowish carpet. I was like, that's just bad. And when I say my Aunt Norma, like everybody had, you had the house, the cool house. But the cool house was, it had wood grain, like that dark wood grain paneling going down the narrow, dark stairway into the basement. You didn't care. You were nine. It's still, it okay, it's then in Nashville. I don't know. Is if we have great facilities, is the kid who's coming to Vanderbilt anyway, is he going to be swayed by facilities? I understand that. You're not thinking broad enough. Think about the kid who almost goes there but says, hey, Penn State. Do you know what you can get at Penn State? Really good degree. Michigan? Michigan's like Michigan and Florida. They're both like they're hoity when it comes to their degrees, right? They're public, but they're like really, really good. At least, I don't know, by like maybe they have more schools. Everybody has two or three or four schools. Maybe Florida and Michigan have 15 schools, like really good degrees. Is it Vanderbilt? No. Well, I want an elite education. Go to Northwestern. My goodness, what they have now. Wake Forest has improved. Stanford. You got options. Vanderbilt, you get to play in some of the nicest visitor locker rooms in football. Dan, when you were covering, you visited some of the visitor locker, like you went on the road, right?
I did.
So the visitor locker rooms, it used to be, I'm not kidding, cinder blocks that didn't go all, it was like under the end zone stands, it was cinder blocks that didn't go all the way to the girders and like boards with hooks on it. It's not that anymore, is it?
Some places still a little bit, but at least some of them, they at least have portable lockers in them now.
Outstanding. So, you know, if you're Vanderbilt, you get to be like you window shop. Imagine playing at Vanderbilt and have you been to Vanderbilt Stadium? I have. Wow. It's paid for. They're changing it. They're spending now. They've said they are spending now, and good for you. You're not doing it enough, and you're actually doing it wrong. You should have torn the thing down and built anew because your players, their experience with facilities, it's not as bad as it used to. Literally, I know at Auburn's visitors, I was in their post game like Florida played, Nightmare of Jordan Hare. It was Halloween, 1987, and Kerwin Bell just got had a shot early, and I think it was Harrison Houston. He had somebody, maybe on the first play of the game, I mean open and deep, and missed it, and then that literally was the one chance downhill after that. So I'm in the visitor's locker room afterwards, and Kerwin Bell's talking, and I'm looking around going, this place is the biggest dump. Like, it couldn't you didn't want the players to wear bare feet in there. It's not quite that, but it's not so far away in some places, Dan says. But for a Vanderbilt player, you get that, and then you walk out of the tunnel in Sanford Stadium, or one of my favorite places, and I don't know what it is, the angles, maybe it's that like on two sides where they got that giant wall, welcome to Florida, down in Gainesville. They walk out of the tunnel in the swamp and go, oh, wow. Or they're playing, you know, 2001 and the dry ice and all that in Columbia. Wow, wow. And then you go back next week and you got a home game with Kentucky and you're like, sad face. So if you're just limited to those two categories, at least be in the second category. We're doing stuff to keep up. They're not, man. They're not parade. You know who they are? Vanderbilt's that, you know, they're that person always comes in like after everybody's gone getting all the free souvenir cups and they walk off with like 20 of the souvenir cups. That's Vanderbilt. Like everything's done and gone and they've got this little prize that nobody else really cares about. And I have to say it. We're a top 10 national in college football education. Yeah, good for you. Good for you in the realm of education. You just tacked on college football. I didn't do that. You did that. So that's where they are. All right, we break. We will come wrap up our one next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Sometimes you're not desperate, you're in demand, and someone dresses up their offer and their program, their job to be a little bit rosier than it actually is under the surface, and you don't find out until it's too late. And all of a sudden you get there and you're getting told no on things that your opponents get told yes is on, but the fans don't know that. Media doesn't know that.
Josh Pate, he has a podcast. It's called the Late Kick Podcast. And not laying that on any higher in particular, but he is explaining. And then he gave a detail, like budgetary. All right, I take the job. He's telling why some coaching hires just don't work out the way that we were expecting them to. And he went the budgetary. He said there are things that we no one would ever see. It's not a lack of interest, for certain. But there are things that the spin the wheel that just landed on is UCF. There are things that the UCF fan would never know that the UCF coach has these hurdles been thrown in his way. Now, it can be Mount Everest. It can be Maginot Line. You got, you know, there's different things there. But budgetary, knowing any money. Well, you can still get around that, but you have to really hire really well and then get prepared to rehire in maybe two seasons, three seasons. So that's what you got. And he's saying, so that's why they don't work. Tell you why, some coach, he said, when you show up and things aren't the way you thought things were going to be. Totally other end of the spectrum. That was Dennis Franchione, and that's been other coaches as well. It's more difficult for this to occur now because there's so much transparency and you just got no choice when it comes to the NCAA. And boy, is that a different frontier. But Dennis Franchione, when he took that Bama job, he showed up and realized pretty quickly, oh, no, this is way worse than – because weren't they in the – they were in the process of that thing being worked out with the NCAA. And they told him, nah, it's going to go great. Trust us. He got there and was like, all right, it's not going to go great, is it? No, it's not. It's going to be really bad, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I want out. So he tipped Mike Price, Mike Shula, Saban. Did I miss anybody? I don't think so. So that was Josh Pate. Dan, how was your Monday?
You know, we're off to a great start. I mean, you know, I lost my bracket pool by a point. Not too great about that. But aside from that, we're in spring football and everything's moving right along. So that's what we've got. Over the weekend, Steve Sarkisian drew the ire of some a little bit with this line. Quote, I think one of the key messages we've talked to the team about as we evaluate the first week is, you cannot get complacent regardless of who you were a year ago, which, of course, you know, a lot of times I feel like there's just one word that people hear and they don't hear the rest of the thing, or they don't even necessarily give the rest of the context to what they're trying to say. Because I think if nothing else, we give all the time the credit to Nick Saban, the same to Kirby Smart to some degree as well. All coaches do this where, oh, hey, they're talking to their team through the media. That's what Steve Sarkisian is trying to do, is he's trying to say enough with all of the expectations around here and us not meeting said expectations, because right now when we need to put in the work, we're not putting in the work that we need to do. I think if nothing else, the message to the team is don't think you've arrived. You have not gotten here yet. You're nowhere close to being anywhere where you think you need to be in order to be a championship program. And that's what he's trying to say to his guys right now, is he's trying to say this is week one. If you guys think that putting in all of the work to this point and all of a sudden we're going to be Big 12 champions and we're going to be in the college football playoff and Texas truly will be back this year, he's trying to guard against that thought process already of basically telling his guys, you haven't arrived yet. You're not even close to having arrived yet.
Got to agree with you on that. This one thing when you're talking about, you know, I was mentioning earlier, spring practice and the outcome and transfers and whatever else is going to happen there. It has really stilted the way the relationships that coaches have with players. It has taken away some of the ability to meander through spring and even deep into August, because all you got to do is hook the kid until he gets to a certain date and then he won't transfer. That's all been blown away. It has changed the relationship to the point that I think there's a lot more, I'll say again, a lot more honesty, a lot more brutal honesty. And so I think that's always a good thing. Certainly when it comes to if you have 1 year, 4 years left, 1 year, 5 years left, being up front is in this day and age when you can easily replace a kid, especially the one with so much eligibility, and he may view it as a positive anyway, that instead of going from an 18 or 19 year old to someone who may be 21, 22, 23, that's supposed to be win, win, win for the incoming player that maybe the coach has never met in person as well. So, yeah, a lot of opportunities there.
Hey, it's Finn, and if you've been listening to 680 for long, you know that I'm a big fan of Audi Atlanta. That's where I got my Audi Q8 e-tron, which I absolutely love. And it's the only dealership I would recommend to my friends and my family. And here's why. For one, Audi Atlanta has a great selection of luxury vehicles. They helped me find the exact SUV I was looking for, and the purchase was super easy. A fully transparent experience catered to me. The same experience they provide all their customers. And here's one more reason that makes Audi Atlanta so special. During the month of April, Audi Atlanta will make a donation to Enduring Hearts for every vehicle sold. Thanks to the efforts of Enduring Hearts, children with heart transplants are living longer and healthier lives. Get the Audi you've always wanted while supporting a great cause. To learn more about Enduring Hearts and to view our current specials, visit AudiAtlanta.com to start or complete your entire purchase online. Or shop Audi Atlanta in person, like I did, on Peachtree Boulevard just inside the perimeter. Together, we have the power to make positive changes that could last a lifetime.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.